Thank you for downloading the East Haven Podcast. For more information about our church, please visit easthavenchurch.org. Now, please join Pastor Kevin Reiser as he brings us this week's message.
So we talked last week about building relationships with our friends and neighbors and building relationships with the community in which we live and the people that are connected to us just by proximity of who we are and where we are and where we do our shopping and our gathering here in the South Belt community. If we're going to be able to build those kind of relationships, then we have to understand something about relationships and about what friendship looks like and how friendships are developed and how we get to be the kind of person that other people want to be friends with. And so I want to talk for the next several weeks about building relationships. When I was raising my kids, we had this conversation all the time. And it's a very short but very true conversation. If you want a friend, you need to be a friend. The problem with friendship is that friendship is messy. Relationships in general are just messy. We all come in it with certain expectations and certain baggage, and we expect the people in our lives to live up to some kind of standard. And when they don't, our initial reaction is to go, okay, I'm done being friends with you. But I want you to know this morning that Jesus never flipped his hands out and said, I'm done being friends with you. But instead, Jesus tells us that he's going to be a friend. The Old Testament says that he will be a friend who is closer to us even than our own brother or sister. There's a kindred spirit in a relationship with Jesus Christ. And if he's going to be that kind of friend to us, then I think we need to figure out how to dig deep and learn how to be that kind of friend to other people, even people that don't measure up, even people that don't deserve to be in a relationship with us. Here's how this all got started. I was just reading through some stuff, not particularly. It's kind of one of those mindless things where you know you need sermon illustrations, and so you're reading stuff, and then all of a sudden something jumps out and gets the wheels turning. And I came across this story by a guy named Tim Kimmel. Tim is the president of Generation Ministries, and he was talking about his 40th birthday. And he was talking about how it's kind of a big deal and how he's kind of feeling sad and blue and about, you know, the kind of midlife crisis thing. He was talking to one of his buddies about going through this midlife crisis, and his friend began to laugh at him and said, midlife? You're way past midlife. There's no way you're going to live to be 80. You know, that didn't help him at all. It just kind of made things worse, actually. But while he was out with his wife, Darcy, he began to talk about death. Always a happy birthday dinner conversation. And he looked at his wife and he asked, how many people does it take to carry a casket? And she looked at him like, wow, you're a downer. She said, well, you know, it takes six. And he's like, it does. And he said, and if I were to die at the table tonight, who would you get to carry my casket for me? And she began listing the people that she thought might be good casket carriers for her husband's untimely demise. And while he's listening to the names and to the list that she's making, he's thinking to himself, you know what? I think those people probably would carry my casket. He goes on to say in his story, he said, they would probably be happy to carry my casket if they didn't have anything else on their agenda for the day. But then in his writing, he said, I'm not sure I want those people to carry my casket. I want people who would drop whatever they were doing because they cared for me so that they could come that day and drop me. Then he says, my conversation with my wife that night reminded me that I had some work to do in the areas of committed friendships. He says, I realize this sounds morbid, but I decided that I needed to start grooming. I love this. He said, I decided I needed to start grooming my pallbearers. He needs to start grooming his pallbearers. Certainly not because I planned on needing them anytime soon, but because they represent the people who have been with me through the best and the worst times of my life. It was obvious to me that if I wanted to have rich friendships, then I would have to learn to be a loyal friend. The problem we make in friendships is we think friendships are all about us instead of thinking that friendships are all about our friends. And Jesus says, I'm your friend and I'm all in for you. When we tell Jesus, Jesus, I'm your friend as long as it's not inconvenient for me. Jesus sets for us the proper example of what kind of friend we need to be. And Jesus sets for us the proper example of how we need to act and react and relate to those in and around the world in which we live. The people who are in our immediate sphere of influence, but also those people that we come in contact with each and every day. So let me ask you the question this morning. How are you at being a friend? How are you at being a friend? This morning it's a time to evaluate. Are the relationships in my life primarily about me Or are the relationships in my life primarily about me impacting them? Because that's the huge difference we want to talk about today. Proverbs chapter 17, verse 17, Solomon writes, "A friend loves at all times, and a kindred spirit is born for adversity." A friend loves at all times, but a kindred spirit is born for adversity. This comes home to roost in my life in the fact that I grew up in Louisiana. Now, if you go to Louisiana and you drive around the neighborhoods, particularly the old neighborhoods that were built back in the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, you'll notice an interesting thing about the neighborhoods and the houses in the neighborhoods in Louisiana. Nobody has a garage. They don't. They have a carport. And a carport is the roof of the garage without the walls and the door of the garage. And so it's just this big open breezeway that's attached to the house. And you're like, well, that makes, you know, Louisiana people, they poor. They can't afford the other three walls and a garage door. It just makes sense that they wouldn't have one. No, it's not why they don't have a garage. It's a cultural thing. The carport is the social gathering place. And there's a beautiful thing associated with the culture, the Cajun people, the people of South Louisiana, that I have not seen any place else in the United States that I've ever been. And other than Alaska and Hawaii, I've been to all 50 states. But I've never seen a connection to each other like the Cajun people have in their willingness to be a connected people to the people that live in and around who they are. Look, when you got home on Friday afternoon, you opened up the back door that connected your house to the carport, and you brought out the recliner, and you brought out the kitchen table, and you brought out the sofa, and you set them on the carport, and you set the gumbo cooker up, or the cage, or the crawfish pot up, or the jambalaya pot up, and you, that was a signification to all of the people that are in the neighborhood, soup's on, y'all come. One of the things that I have found to be very true in growing up in South Louisiana is that if you have the pleasure of having a Cajun friend, that is your friend for life. No matter how stupid you get, no matter how many choices you make, they're your friend for life. Because they understand on a community level that a friend loves at all time. And a kindred spirit is born for adversity. One of the first places I ever pastored was a little fishing village called Miette Point. Miette Point is just outside of Franklin, Louisiana, and it was exactly what you'd think it would be. It would be the stereotypical fishing village, moss-covered oak trees right on one of the major bayou thoroughfares there, and everybody in the village was a fisherman. Every family in the village had a fishing boat, and there was a little church there, and there was a little shotgun trailer that they let the preacher stay in. And that was one of the first experiences Debbie and I ever had in the pastorate lifestyle. Nobody in the village had more than an eighth grade education, but they were some of the smartest, most technologically savvy people I'd ever met. They would build their fishing vessels from the ground up. They'd do it just based on what stuff they had in their heads. They could drill a prop shaft super straight. They could put that boat in the water and they could drop it exactly where the water line was going to be. They'd paint the water line before they ever put the boat in the water. They just knew. There's an interesting thing that happens in that fishing village, and that is that it's all for one and one for all. Everybody gets up early in the morning before the sun's up. They all get their boats in the water, and they all go out and they start fishing or shrimping that morning. They all have radios, and if somebody breaks down, every fisherman and every family in the village goes to help that person. They get their boat back to the village of Miette Point. They get it up on dry dock. They work on that boat until that boat is functional again. They drop that thing back in the water, and then everybody in the community goes back to doing what they were going to do. It's a beautiful story of what I believe friendship in the Bible is supposed to look like. A friend loves at all time, when your motor's working and when it's not, when your hull's leaking and when it's not. Kindred spirits were born for adversity. Solomon also goes on to tell us in Proverbs 18, verse 24, there are friends who destroy each other, but a real friend sticks closer than a brother. Real friends who destroy each other gossip about each other behind their back. Real friends who destroy each other post unkind things on social media and hide those comments from that person. There's a terrible word that's emerged in our culture now, and that word is frenemy. I hope you don't have any, because a frenemy is the combination of the word friend and enemy. We don't need frenemies in our life. You don't need to be anybody's frenemy. There are friends who destroy each other. There are friends who talk bad about each other, who comment and criticize and ridicule, say unkind things. But there's a real friend There's a real friend who sticks closer than a brother. That real friend that Solomon's alluding to is a foreshadowing of the story of Jesus Christ. He has been a real friend to the sinner. And because he has been a real friend to the sinner, that gives the sinners the opportunity to be a real friend to other sinners. If we want to make a difference in our community, we need to learn how to be a positive influence. And the best way to do that is by building friendship relationships with the people in and around our life, in our home, on our street, in our church, in our community. Three truths concerning the subject this morning. Truth number one is that a real friend is going to be a supportive friend. A real friend is going to be a supportive friend. Jesus is a supportive friend. We all need somebody behind us to make us better. We always need somebody behind us to lift us up and to tell us that we can do this. That we all need somebody behind us to look us in the eye and go, look, you can. We all need that cheerleader. A story is told of a mayor of a large city who was walking home from an evening city events with his wife. And while they're walking along the busy city streets, there's a construction scaffolding that's been built there. And as they get to a place where the scaffolding is, this construction worker makes his way down the scaffolding, bumps into the mayor and his wife, and recognizes the mayor's wife. The mayor's wife's name is Peggy. He says, Peggy, how are you? She calls the construction worker by name. They hug. They have this big conversation. They reminisce about what their life is like and about their children and about all the things that are going on in life. They say their goodbyes. They part ways. The construction worker goes back up the scaffolding. The mayor and his wife Peggy continue walking down. And as they're rounding the corner at the next stoplight, the mayor just begins to chuckle. And Peggy looks at the mayor and says, what are you laughing about? And the mayor says, you see, if you'd have married him, you'd have been the wife of a construction worker. And Peggy reaches up and pats him on the shoulder and stops and turns and looks him right in the face and said, oh no, my dear friend, if I'd have married him, he'd be the mayor. We all need somebody, right? Somebody to make us better, somebody to be supportive, somebody to cheer us on, somebody to look at us in the middle of our own delusion and tell us, you know what, I love you anyway. Are you that kind of friend? Behind everybody who achieves, there is a friendship of great worth. We have to be cautious at this point, though, because being supportive does not mean being enabling. It does not mean being enabling. And when you enable somebody's bad behavior, you are doing them a greater disservice and you are less of a friend than you are by challenging their behavior. Sometimes you have to call a friend out. That's what good friends would do. That's what good friends would do. I have friends, RJ, Jack, Bill, who will call me out. I have friends who will say, Kev, I think you've missed this. I have friends who will go, you know what? You probably need to rethink something. And I'm grateful that I have. Those are the guys I want to be my pallbearers. Those are the guys that I want to be able to carry my casket, because those are the guys who have helped carry my life. Tim Keller said this week in one of his daily tweets, if you don't follow him, I wish you would. If you're with me on Facebook, I repost a bunch of his stuff out there. But Tim Keller said this week, everyone says they want community and friendship, but mention accountability or commitments to people and they run the other way. Look, valuable friendship requires accountability. Trusted friendship requires commitment. And so being a supportive friend is very different than being an enabling friend. Paul tells the church at Ephesus in Ephesians chapter 4, verse 15, here's what you need to do instead. Instead of being enabling, you need to speak the truth in love. Why? We like to quote that passage. Look, bro, I'm just telling you, man, I love you. And so because I love you, I just got to be honest with you, and I got to be all in your face about something. Now, that may or may not be legitimate love, but we use it. You know, the Bible says, I got to tell you the truth. I got to tell you the truth in love, so I love you. But here you go. Boom. That may or may not work. That may not be in that person's best interest. That may be in your best interest. That may be a pet peeve of yours, and you just feel like you have to unload it on them at that moment. But it says, speak the truth in love. Why? So we will in all things grow up into Him who is the head, that is Christ. Our motivation for being honest with our friends is to help them find maturity in Christ. And that means that our relationships sometimes get messy. That means that sometimes we have to, in love, have conversations with people that we don't particularly want to have conversations with. But your goal, your motivation has to be so that you can help them grow up into Him who is the head, that is Christ. Is your goal to help your friends mature? Is your goal to help your friends become more Christ-like? Just remember this. If you have the kind of friendship where you can give those kind of love conversations, you must also be willing to receive those kind of love conversations. You can't be a true friend and want to teach your other friends if you yourself are not a teachable friend. It's accountability to the relationship. It's commitment to one another so that you can help each other grow up into Christ. Jesus calls you and me out as ungodly. Jesus wastes no time in talking about the fact that you and I are wretched sinners. Paul calls himself a wretched man. The Bible calls our righteous acts as filthy rags. Paul says in Romans chapter 5, verse 6, you see, at just the right time, when we were still powerless, Christ died for the what? The ungodly. That's what the Bible says about you and about me. We are ungodly. He calls us out. He calls us out in our condition. It is an ungodly condition. But if you skip down a couple verses and look at verse 8, but God demonstrates His own love towards us in this. While we were still sinners, what? Christ died for us. The Bible says one would hardly die for an unworthy man. You might choose to die for a righteous man, but Jesus died for the wretched. Jesus offers you such a great friendship. And He offers you that friendship because it is His desire for you to know that He supports you. He will not enable you, but He supports you. He wants to be there. You don't have to look any further than the passage about strapping on the yoke. That's a passage of support. That's a passage of friendship. That's a passage of I am on your side. Jesus is a supportive friend. If we want to make friends, we need to learn how to be supportive friends, even in the midst of messy relationships. But we also need to understand that if we're going to be the right kind of friend, not only do we need to be a supportive friend, but we need to be a strengthening friend. We need to speak good and positive things into people's lives. We need to be their cheerleader. We need to rally them and prop them up. Some have the spiritual gift of exhortation. When we do the spiritual gifts class, people talk to me about, well, the thing said exhortation, I have no idea what that means. That means you just coach them up. And if you don't have the spiritual gift, if you have a friend, then you should be somebody who coaches the other person up. You need to be there to give them strength. When I was working for Fruit of the Loom, they made everybody in management read and take the Dale Carnegie course, How to Win Friends and Influence People. One of the quotes that I pulled out of that book years ago says this. Dale Carnegie writes, you can make more friends in 2 months by becoming interested in other people than you can in 2 years by trying to get other people interested in you. Are your conversations always about you? Are your conversations always about what you need or what you want or what you desire or what you lack? If they are, you're probably not the right kind of friend. You're probably a life sucker where you just drain the life out of somebody. Flip the script. Ask open-ended questions about them. What's going on in their life? How do things want to... We have a relationship with Stutchberry as a church, and that relationship has been simmering for quite a while because the counselor there at Stutchberry is a woman named Tina Jo. And when I first met Tina Jo, I got to tell you, Tina Jo scared me because she wears these big old spiky heels. And when I first met her several years ago, her hair was jet black with white streaks in it. And she has false eyelashes, big false eyelashes. And she's just not somebody I would consider myself friends with, right? Her husband was a motorcycle guy, and she rides the motorcycle and all that kind of thing. Interesting thing happened when Tabitha was in the first grade. Tabitha did not have Tina Jo, but she was in the classroom right next door to Tina Jo. And during the course of Tabitha's first grade year, I got to know Tina Jo. Let me rephrase that. Tina Jo got to know me. There's a beautiful thing that happens when you're in Tina Jo's presence. And one of the things I learned early on in my relationship with her is that when you are in Tina Jo's presence, you are the most important person in the world. Not just in the room. You're the most important person in the world at that moment. She is engaging. She is kind. And she will spend every moment she has to talk to you about you. And she smiles, and she has a beautiful, radiant smile, and she smells good. And when you leave, you're like, That was the greatest human encounter I've ever had in my life. She is the type of person that is a magnet. She's the type of person that you want to be in the room with. Because when you are in the room with her, you are valuable. And her entire focus is to strengthen you, to make you better, to give you hope and encouragement and a future. She's just amazing that way. Also come to find out that she's a very delightful Christ follower. Again, I judged a book by its cover, and I shouldn't have. She's an amazing human being. And when I think of what I'm talking about today, I think of her. Now, I know I'm supposed to be like Jesus, but if I need a human representative of what Jesus is probably like in relationships, Tina Jo would be kind of my go-to example. She's an amazing human being, an amazing woman. She spends more time being interested in you than she is in trying to get you being interested in her. Look at what the writer of Hebrews says in Hebrews chapter 10. The writer of Hebrews says, "And let us consider how we may spur one another on." We're each other's cheerleaders. We are to be there in each other's corner. We are to rally around and support each other. Spur one another on for what? For love and good deeds. Anybody find it hard to love sometimes? Anybody find it hard to do good deeds sometimes? That's why you have a church family. That's why you have a small group. And there's a whole culture out there now that says, I don't need a church family. I don't need a small group. I'm finding my own spirituality. If you're finding your spirituality on your own, you're missing out on God's best and God's blessing for your life. Period. End of story. Because this thing, this organism called the church, is designed to give us a place where we can be each other's strength, so that we can spur each other on to love and to do good deeds to those that aren't among us. Jesus says, the way you love and do good deeds and spur each other on in the context of this group tells that group out there how successful you're going to be with them. Because if you are strengthening each other in here, those people that are out there are going to want what you have. You're going to be salt and light that adds flavor and adds direction to their lives. Do you see how this all meshes together? Verse 25, he goes on to say, let us not give up meeting together. There's a call to worship. There's a call to small group, as some are in the habit of doing. But let us encourage one another all the more as you see the day approaching. Not only do you need to be a supportive friend, but you also need to be a strengthening friend. You need to be able to breathe life into those that come into your life. That's the example. That's what Jesus does for us. That's how Jesus relates to us. There's a great story that appeared in a Methodist bulletin about, it was a guy that was writing, and he'd moved into this new neighborhood. And one of the things that he was trying to do after moving into this new neighborhood was to get his lawn mowed, because it had gotten shaggy. And he didn't want the homeowners association fussing at him right after he just moved into his new neighborhood, right? And so he's out trying to get his lawnmower started, and it's just not going to happen. Well, the guy next door across the street, I don't remember as the story told it, but one of the guys that lives right there was watching this thing unfold. And so he just shows up. He's got this big bag of shiny tools. And he says, you mind if I help you with your lawnmower? And the guy said, no, man, I can't get the thing to work. And so the neighbor comes in with his shiny tools and he fixes things up. And within about 20 or 30 minutes, as the story goes, he was able to get this guy's lawnmower up and running. And so they're standing in the garage and they're making conversation. And while they're chatting there in the driveway, the guy that's new to the neighborhood is checking out his friend's tools. And he asked this question. He said, man, those are great tools. He said, what else can you build with those things? And the guy from across the street looked at him and he said, friends. He used the tools at his disposal to build friends. I don't know what your tools are at your disposal, but you have something you can use to build friendships. Jesus says, the tool I have is my life. I will lay down my life so that I can build a friendship with you. And in doing so, you can then have a friendship with my Father. Paul prays this prayer in Ephesians chapter 1. He says, I pray that the eyes of your heart may be enlightened in order that you may know the hope to which has called you, the riches of his glorious inheritance in the saints, and his incomparably great power for us who believe. That power is like the working of his mighty strength. Jesus used his tools to strengthen you. What tools are you going to use to help strengthen those that are around you? There's another thing a friend needs to be. Not only is a friend to be supportive and strengthening, but you and I need to be faithful. We need to be faithful. Some of you are old enough to remember Brady Bunch. But there was a Brady Bunch episode where Marcia was doing this acting thing, and she had to have a little number. And so what they decided to do is they decided to do this hobo clown routine. And the whole concept behind the clown routine was you for me and me for you will muddle through whatever we do together wherever we go. Some of you are seeing visions of Carol Brady and Marcia even now. You remember the episode? We'll muddle through whatever we do together wherever we go. Jesus tells us that He is that kind of friend. He is that kind of person in our life. He is that kind of commitment to you and to me. And He puts up with all kinds of terrible things that we think, that we say, and that we do. And He never leaves us, and He never forsakes us, and He never abandons us, and He never gives up on us, and He never walks away from us. No, it's not who He is. He's the friend that sticks closer than a brother. It's a beautiful representation. He's faithful. We talked last week in my small group class about James chapter 4. And James chapter 4 is an interesting chapter because it's a list of things that you're supposed to do in order to stay away from temptation. And it's a list of things that you and I are probably already doing that get us into temptation trouble and get us into sin. And one of the things that happens in about verse 4 or 5 is it says, and when you act this way and when you do these things, you are setting yourself up as an enemy with God. And as Francis Chan is talking through this passage, he says, this isn't where you decide you're just going to be God's enemy and go, God. This is where your lifestyle is so reprehensible that God looks down at you and goes, you are my enemy. I don't know about you, but I don't want to be God's enemy. That's going to end bad. And if you'd stop right there, you'd go to bed shivering in your shoes. But right at the end of that, you are God's enemy, comes verse 6. And verse 6 says, therefore, He gives more grace. Wait a minute. Let me see if I understand this. I have messed my life up so bad that God has declared that I am His enemy. That's right. But even though I have messed up so bad that God makes this declaration that I have set myself up as God's enemy, He overcomes that because His grace is even so much more than my wickedness. Is that what I'm hearing you tell me? Yeah, that's what I'm telling you. That's what James was telling his audience. But He gives more grace. You and I do not deserve such a faithful friend. It is verse 6 of James chapter 4 that makes verse 1 of James or of Romans chapter 8 so possible. He gives more grace. And because He gives more grace, I am not subject to condemnation. And if He is willing to give me that much grace and not willing to subject me to condemnation, should I not be that kind of faithful friend to those that are in my life and not offer them my condemnation? Relationships are messy. People are messy. Friendships are messy. And they are hard, and they require us to dig in and reach up and ask for strength from our Heavenly Father. And if you and I are going to be faithful friends, if we're going to stick together and help each other muddle through, you and I aren't going to be able to do that outside of a relationship with Jesus Christ. While it is true, if you want a friend, you must be a friend. But you can't be the right kind of friend if you are not first and foremost a friend with Jesus. So let me ask you this. Are you this morning a friend with Jesus? Because He has been everything that He needs to be for you. He's been supportive. He's been strengthening, and He's been faithful, even when you probably haven't. I don't know if you've seen the movie 42. I hope you have. If you haven't, that needs to be your next Netflix download. Because 42 is the story of Jackie Robinson. Jackie Robinson is the first African-American to break the color barrier in Major League Baseball. And when he was a young, aggressive player, they were playing a game in the presence of the home team, or of the home crowd. And he makes an error at second base. And the crowd lets him know of their displeasure. He He was easy to be disappointed in. He wasn't like everybody else. And the crowd let him know. But there's a beautiful moment in the movie where Pee-wee Reese, the shortstop, walks over and he puts his arm around Jackie Robinson. And the two of them just stand there and look out at the crowd. And in the movie, the boos and the cheers all of a sudden ramp up for a moment, and then they realize the statement that's being made. And the statement that's being made is that this is my friend, and whether you approve or not, I am faithful to my friend. Immediately following this scene, there's a funny line in the movie where they're fixing to go back to playing baseball, and Pee-wee Reese gives Jackie Robinson a little punch in the chest, and he says, "Heck, tomorrow, maybe we'll all wear 42. That way they can't tell us apart." That's what faithful friends look like. That's how faithful friends connect and react to each other. Jackie Robinson later said that moment when Pee-wee Reese put his arm around my shoulder literally saved my career. Pee-wee was a faithful friend, and Pee-wee saved Jackie's career according to Jackie's own testimony. But you need to hear me this morning. Jesus Christ saved everything about you. He saved everything about your past. He saved everything about your present. He saved everything about your future. We're commanded in Deuteronomy to be strong, to be courageous, to not be terrified. For the Lord goes before you and He will never leave you or forsake you. You sit here this morning and go, being strong sometimes, being courageous, maybe less times than that. Not being afraid, not being terrified, I don't know how to do that. What do you mean you'll never leave me or forsake me? How are you going to make that promise come true? Well, God kept His promise because He sent us a faithful friend, and that friend's name was Jesus Christ. Paul tells us in Romans chapter 6, if we have been united with Him, with Christ, like this in death, then we will certainly also be united with Him in His resurrection. Jesus left His position of heaven. And He walked over beside you when you made your great errors in life. He puts His arm around you. And the two of you stand there looking at the critics of the world. And they're telling you, you deserve our support. You don't deserve any strength or motivation from us. You certainly don't deserve our faithfulness. And Jesus says, if you'll make a commitment to be my friend, if you'll make a conscious decision to faithfully be devoted to me, then you and I will put on the same number. And tomorrow they won't be able to tell us apart. That's what friendship looks like. My friend Jeff reposted a tweet a couple days ago. It's from a guy named Bill Yon. I don't know him. I trust Jeff. The tweet said this: the person still in front of you and the person on the scene after your weakest and ugliest moment, that is your friend. The person in front of you and the person on the scene after your weakest and ugliest moment, that is your friend. Jesus is that person. He has been, He will be with you in your weakest and ugliest moments. He will be your friend. And until you and I can make a connection that until we are friends with Jesus first, we're not going to be real good friends with the rest of the world around us. So let me ask you this morning, will you evaluate your friendship with Jesus? He's ready to give you His jersey. He's already given you His life. Question is, will you put your faith and trust in the life that He gave? Will you believe in Him to do for you what you cannot do for yourself, and that is provide salvation? He wants to be friends with you so that He can offer you everything that friendship inspires. Because in the grand scheme of things, He needs you to be friends with other people so that you can help draw them to Him so that He can be friends with them. Make a choice to be friends with Jesus today. I'm going to be standing down here at the front. If you don't know how to do that, if you don't know how to have that conversation about that relationship, man, just come talk to me. I'll be happy to help you start that process. You may be sitting here this morning going, I don't know how to be friends with sinners. I don't know how to be friends with people that aren't like me. I don't know how to be friends with people that don't believe what I believe, don't do what I do, don't act what I act. You need to be the kind of person who will strengthen them, who will support them, not enable them, and be willing for them to walk away. And you need to be faithful. Those are all the things Jesus is for you. You just may need Jesus' strength today to help you be that for others.
Thank you for joining us. If you'd like to speak with someone about how you can apply this week's message to your life, please call the church office at 281-922-5520. You can find more information about East Haven by visiting easthavenchurch.org. Remember as you go to live as God's people, telling God's story, building God's kingdom.